As we continue our study in the book of Proverbs, we're still in the 10th chapter, and we're now ready to begin at verse 19, which is another proverb. So let us read that verse. In the multitude of words, there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. The general rule is, the more words you produce, the more apt you are to say something improper and thus commit sin. Whereas it's almost impossible to sin by not speaking. Those who are continually verbose are the ones to whom this would most aptly apply. Of course, this would not apply to a situation where harm would come to another if you did not speak, nor would this apply at a time when your speech would be beneficial to another person, as we shall see in the next two verses. But in general, silence is much more wise than the making of much speech. Since much speaking is more likely to expose the speaker to sin, the wiser action is usually to restrain the tongue. And we see this borne out in other scriptures. In Amos 5:13, therefore the prudent shall keep silence in that time, for it is an evil time. Again in James 1:26, if any man among you seem to be religious and bridles not his tongue, but deceiveth his own heart, this man's religion is vain. Now that is really a strong statement, that by not bridling the tongue, by not controlling the tongue, it can actually make your religion vain. And the word vain means useless or worthless. Your religion is of no value if you're not able to bridle the tongue. Again, James makes it even stronger in James 3, verses 2 through 8, for in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body. Behold, we put bits in the horse's mouth that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which though they be so great, and are driven of fierce winds, yet they are turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. Even so the tongue is a little member, and boasteth great things. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and setteth on fire the course of nature, and is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beast, and of birds, and of serpents, and of things in the sea is tamed, and hath been tamed of mankind, but the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. So we can see then that the tongue is a very important item when it comes to our being able to please God. Misuse of it is something that can cause us to be displeasing to God, cause us to lose our position inside of God because our religion becomes vain. And so this little proverb says, in the multitude of words there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. The more words you speak, the more apt you are to sin. The next proverb is found in verses 20 and 21, which say, the tongue of the just is as choice silver, but the heart of the wicked is little worth. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for want of wisdom. We're taught here how to value humans, not by their wealth and position in the world, but by their goodness. Good people are good for something that promotes the will of God. Jesus prayed to the Father, Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, Matthew 6 and 8. Though these godly people may be poor and low in the world, and may not have power and riches to do good with, yet they still have the ability to be valuable and useful if they will make proper use of the tongue. The tongue of the righteous may be the agent through which the message of God may be delivered to others. The very thing God wishes to communicate to humans, things found in the Word of God, may be learned first by listening to the speech of God's people. Mark 12:35, a good man out of the great treasure of the heart bringeth forth good things. The mind, which is the great treasure of the heart, that's where a good man can bring forth good things. This makes good people valuable, for it tells us here that the tongue of the just is better than choice silver. That's what the psalm says. They are sincere and are free from the dross of deception and evil purposes. God's words are compared to purified silver, other places in the Bible. In Psalms 12:6, The words of the Lord are pure words, as silver tried in a furnace of earth, purified 7 times. His words may be taken as truth and may be relied on. Yet these are the very words which just people will speak. They're valuable words and will be of great benefit to those that hear them with an honest mind. The hearers will have their lives actually enriched if they will but apply these words. This is better than choice silver. This also makes good people useful. He says, the lips of the righteous feed many. They do this by having lips that are full of the Word of God, which is the bread of life. This is that sound doctrine which nourishes souls and brings soul to salvation. These are the words which cause the spirit of just men to be made perfect, according to Hebrews 12:23. The words of spiritual people are spiritual food to the needy, to those who are spiritually hungry. But bad people are worth nothing. One can get no good from them. The proverb says, the heart of the wicked is of little worth, here in verse 20. In this passage, heart and tongue are used as parallel terms because they are so closely linked. One cannot have a bad heart and also have a good tongue. One reflects the true nature of the other. Whatever comes from the abundance of the heart of ungodly people cannot be worth much. Their principles, their notions, their thoughts, their purposes, and all the things that fill them and affect them are worldly and carnal and therefore of no value. John 3:31, he that cometh from above is above all, but he that is of the earth is earthly and speaketh of the earth. He that cometh from heaven is above all. 1 Corinthians 2:14, but the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him, neither can he know them because they are spiritually discerned. So regardless of what the wicked person says about his heart and his intentions and the value of his speech, yet the Creator says of him, it is of little worth. These wicked have other characteristics. One can do them no good until they're willing to change. While many are fed by the lips of the righteous, yet he says fools die for want of wisdom. And they certainly are fools to die for a lack of that which they might so easily obtain. The word for wisdom really means heart. So their heart, or mind, is not functioning like it should be to be able to sustain spiritual life. With God's word left out of their heart or mind, it is not capable of sustaining spiritual life. While the righteous can feed others, fools starve themselves and cannot help anyone. So let us read again the proverb in verses 20 and 21. The tongue of the just is as choice silver. The heart of the wicked is little worth. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for want of wisdom. So it's much more valuable to be around someone who's going to speak the words of God, someone who has the tongue of the just, than it is to be around someone who has the heart of the wicked and who will die for want of wisdom. Our next proverb is in verse 22. Verse 22 says, the blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it. Here we are told that the wealth gotten while serving God, called the blessing of the Lord, is much different from the wealth gotten by violating God's will. Worldly wealth is the thing most people have their hearts set upon, but they are usually mistaken about the true nature of the wealth without God and the way wealth should be acquired. In this proverb, we are told what wealth we should desire. The wealth received from the Lord is not only given in abundance, but it is wealth you can have with no sorrow attached to it. The blessing of the Lord is a wealth you do not have to worry to get and keep. It does not injure your spirit to enjoy it, and there is no tormenting grief for fear of losing it. There is no guilt caused by feeling that we've abused it. The blessings of the Lord are blessings our heart can take comfort in and blessings we can do good with. They are blessings we can joyfully serve God with while using them. There is no guilt nor sadness associated with using God's blessings. We must remember that this desirable wealth is obtained not by cheating and defrauding the world, but it comes by the blessing of God. It is the blessing of God that maketh rich and hath no sorrow. As the love of God gives us these blessings, we can also get the grace of God as an accompanying blessing. This preserves a soul from those turbulent lusts and passions which are usually used to bring about an increase in riches. Truly it is that the hand of the diligent makes rich, verse 4. But here he says that the blessing of the Lord makes rich. So we must conclude that it is the blessing of the Lord on the hand of the diligent which gives us riches in the proper way and amount. This combination of our efforts and God's blessings makes our wealth truly spiritual riches. The work and effort required to obtain these riches is our duty, but it's God's blessing and grace which allows it to happen, so He deserves all the glory for our riches. This principle is clearly illustrated as we look back in the Old Testament and see how God dealt with His people while they were in the wilderness. In Deuteronomy 8, 15 through 20, let's notice what that passage says. Who led thee through that great and terrible wilderness, wherein were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, where there was no water? Who brought thee forth water out of the rock of flint? Who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, which thy fathers knew not, that he might humble thee, that he might prove thee, to do thee good at thy latter end? And thou say in thine heart, my power and the might of mine hand hath got me this wealth. But thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant which he sware unto thy fathers, as it is this day. And it shall be, if thou do at all forget the Lord thy God, and walk after other gods, and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that ye shall surely perish. As the nations which the Lord destroyed before your face, so shall ye perish, because you would not be obedient unto the voice of the Lord your God. Here we see quite plainly that our wealth is closely connected with our service to God. It's God that gives us the wealth. We can't take the credit for it nor the glory for it, and we must use it properly. And although we have so much wealth, if we turn to other gods, turn away from the true and living God, we have no promise that God's going to give us any more support. God will then be against us, and we will eventually lose all of our inheritance and all the wealth that goes with it. So repeating verse 22 again, the blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he has no sorrow with it. So that's what we strive for. We want the blessing of the Lord. That's what's going to make us rich. That's where we will not have to worry about having sorrow. The next proverb is in verse 23, which says, it is as sport to a fool to do mischief, but a man of understanding hath wisdom. Here we see that sin truly is exceedingly sinful. A fool gets pleasure from doing evil. It is as pleasant and as natural for him to do evil as it is for a normal person to laugh. To do wickedness is his delight, his pleasure. It is what he uses to please himself. To him, sin is a laughing matter. When he is warned not to sin, when he is shown that this is displeasing to God, and God will punish those who sin, he makes a jest at the warning of God. He laughs at the promised punishment, and he shakes his fist in the face of God. When he sins, instead of sorrowing for it, he boasts of it, makes fun of warnings, and laughs away any feelings of guilt he may have. Fools make a mock at sin, but among the righteous there is favor. That's in Proverbs 14:9. But the man of understanding, who is no fool, has wisdom. His action will be just the opposite to the fool. If he does do wrong, it is by accident, and it gives him no joy or pleasure. He makes no jest of it. But the vast majority of his actions are not mischief. No greater praise need be given to him than to say he is a man of understanding and has wisdom. This immediately takes him out of the class of the fool. Just as the fool delights in mischief, even so the person of understanding has delight in wisdom. Besides the fact that those with wisdom are bound for heaven, they're further rewarded in this life by getting more pleasure from serving God than sinners get in committing sin. The wise and understanding have joys beyond anything a sinner can ever hope for. So we read verse 23 again. It is sport to a fool to do mischief, but a man of understanding hath wisdom. And that, as we can look around about us and see how true that is. There's a vast difference in those who love to do mischief and those who really have understanding. Our next proverb is in verse 24, which says, "The fear of the wicked, it shall come upon him, but the desire of the righteous shall be granted." Verse 24 is saying very plainly that the righteous receive what they desire, but while the wicked receive what they fear. Hebrews 10:26-29 describes it this way, "For if we sin willfully after we have received the knowledge of the truth, there remaineth no more sacrifice for sins, but a certain fiery looking for of judgment and fiery indignation, which shall devour the adversaries. He that despised Moses' law died without mercy under two or three witnesses. But of how much sore punishment, suppose ye, shall he be thought worthy, who hath trodden under foot the Son of God, and hath counted the blood of the covenant, wherewith he was sanctified, an unholy thing, and hath done despite unto the Spirit of grace." And the teaching here is that if we turn away from the teachings of God, if we turn away from the plan of salvation, which has been given to us and made available to us, there's no other plan we can turn to. There's no other sacrifice. There's no other God. There's no other way to get forgiveness and have salvation. It's only through this plan of God. And so this should strike fear into the wicked. As he becomes wicked and turns from God, he has nothing to look forward to but fear. The righteous are being told here that it shall be well with them, and to the wicked, woe to them. In this respect, this proverb is comparing the wicked with the righteous. It shall be as bad with the wicked as they can fear, and as well with the righteous as they can desire. It is true that there are times when the wicked build themselves up in their wicked actions by having vain hopes, which will deceive them. But at other times, they cannot keep from being haunted by fears that are justified, and those fears, he says, shall come upon them. The God they provoke will be every bit as terrible as they can ever imagine him to be. Psalms 90, verse 11, in King James, "Who knoweth the power of thine anger, even according to thy fear, so is thy wrath." The same verse in NIV, "Who knows the power of your anger, for your wrath is as great as the fear that is due you." Wicked men fear the punishment of sin, but they do not have the wisdom to take advantage of their fears and make their escape. So the things they fear come upon them, and present terrors are but a preview of their future torment. The righteous, on the other hand, truly do sometimes have their fears, but their desire is to receive the favors of God and have a happiness in him, and that desire shall be granted. According to their faith, and not according to their fear, it shall be unto them. Psalm 37:4 says, "Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart." So that's a wonderful passage. So our verse 24, we read it again, which says, "The fear of the wicked, it shall come upon him, but the desire of the righteous shall be granted." Now that's a wonderful thing to know, that this thing that we desire as being followers of God, we're going to get it eventually. It's going to be granted to us. And all the great fear that one could have of the Lord will come upon the wicked. Verse 25, our next proverb, reads like this, "As a whirlwind passeth, so is the wicked no more, but the righteous is an everlasting foundation. The prosperity of the wicked shall quickly end, but the happiness of the righteous shall never end. The wicked make a great noise. They hurry themselves and others like a whirlwind which threatens all who get in the way. But like a whirlwind, they are presently gone, and they pass never to reappear. They are no more. All about them are quiet and glad when the storm is over." Job 6:15, "My brethren have dealt deceitfully as a brook, and as a stream of brooks they pass away." Job 24:5, "Knowest thou not this of old, since man was placed upon the earth, that the triumphing of the wicked is short, and the joy of the hypocrite is but for a moment." Psalm 37:10, "And yet for a little while, and the wicked shall not be. Yea, thou shalt diligently consider his place, and it shall not be." And that same psalm, verses 35 and 36, "I have seen the wicked in great power, and spreading himself like a green bay tree, yet he passed away, and lo, he was not. Yea, I sought him, and he could not be found." As we observe those round about us, we can see that the righteous are not noisy and boisterous and threatening like a whirlwind, but on the contrary, they make no show. They are hidden like a foundation which is low and out of sight. But they are fixed and unmovable in the resolve to follow God and live the godly life. They shall be an everlasting foundation which would withstand the whirlwind if need be. He that is holy shall remain holy and shall not be moved from his happy state. His hope is built on a rock and will not be moved by the storm. In Matthew 7:24-27, Jesus words it like this, "Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man, which built his house upon a rock, and the rain descended, and the floods came, and the wind blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. And everyone that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man, which built his house upon the sand. As the rain descended, and the floods came, and the wind blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell, and great was the fall of it." How much better is it to be among the righteous few than to be among the wicked many? So our proverb in verse 25 says again, "As the whirlwind passeth, so is the wicked no more, but the righteous is an everlasting foundation." So with that verse 25, we will conclude our lesson this time. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying goodbye, friends.